Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Some of you have asked some really unique questions about Tomb Raider and Pete Rose and the Davante Adams trade and my favorite comfort food and whether or not I was a fan of the Spice Girls. Actually, I could probably list a couple songs from the Spice Girls. They've been fairly successful since that time, most of them. I don't know that I was a fan necessarily. I was more Backstreet Boys, not Spice Girls. But I do think their niche and the money they made for themselves, the fame they garnered in a relatively short time, is pretty impressive. Posh Spice, of course, being Victoria Beckham, married to David Beckham, and gosh, aren't they one of the power couples in the country, but really in the world. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Producer Pete tells me there are a lot of philosophical and deep questions for this edition of Ask Amy Anything. I've answered a few of them. I'm glad that he got to the ones that he did. Thank you, as always. By the time I opened up our Facebook page, when the show started, we already had about 65 questions posted there and many more on our show Twix. So thank you, as always. I'll go back and answer as many as I can on Wednesday. I think I'm using my air quotations that this could be a quieter Wednesday, but I thought that about Tuesday as well. I was thinking there's one baseball game in the Bronx, game two of the ALCS, and we've also got a really important hockey game that I wanted to see, including the pregame tributes, that being in Columbus, the Blue Jackets home opener against the defending Stanley Cup champions, but hockey not the reason why it was important. And then all hell breaks loose with the trades and everything else that's going on in football. Tom Brady becomes a minority owner. Jerry Jones lambastes the radio hosts that he normally does his weekly interviews with on our affiliate, 105.3 The Fan. Tells Sean and RJ, well, threatens them essentially, that he's going to replace them with another show. And then tells another reporter, Diana Rossini, that he's going to, something about paying them. He's going to find someone else to pay if they're going to be asking him the types of questions that he got all offended about. I mean, seriously, he's a businessman and not a great bully. He can try to be a bully, but he's not all that scary.
What's your point?
Yeah, my point is that you are the one who puts yourself in this space where you talk ad nauseum after games, before games, during the week. You hold your own press conferences or hold court, as it were. People know that they're going to get these crazy reactions from you. But to go on the air and get defensive and arrogant and pull a power trip and threaten people, Hey, you're the one that has the radio show. If you don't want to talk to members of the media and have them question what's happening with your team, then don't make it a weekly radio appearance, for heaven's sakes. We actually could survive in this country. We could survive as football fans if we did not hear from you 5 or 6 times a week. In fact, absence makes the heart grow fonder. We can't miss you if you never go away. His words might not ring as hollow or might not make people roll their eyes as much if we had less of Jerry Jones.
Arbitrage around our neck.
I know that we enjoy playing some of the cuts here on the show, and I do always go and find the clips from his appearance with Sean and RJ in Dallas, but this is over the top. You don't have to like the questions. You can simply say, I'm not interested in answering them. But to step into a trap, to get your panties into a wad, and to get all upset because someone's asking you about the moves that you didn't make in the offseason that potentially have led to your team being mediocre, I don't know how that is a sign of disrespect or, to be frank, a question that you shouldn't have expected. Do you not know that that's how this goes? Oh my gosh. This is typically what happens too, and it's a dead giveaway. When people start to insult you as opposed to answering questions, usually what that means is they know they've lost the argument or they realize they can't win the debate. And so instead they resort to a different tactic, which is insults. And getting defensive and firing back at the people who ask.
Think I'm an idiot? Do you?
No one thinks you're an... Well, I shouldn't say that. Some people probably do think that he's an idiot. I don't call people names, so at least I try not to. And so I wouldn't go that far, but I understand you're frustrated. I understand that you want your team to do better and that you feel like you're all in and... maybe even feel like that the Cowboys are wasting opportunities here. But all you have to say is, yeah, I'm not going to answer that question. I'm done answering that question. Next question. It's not that hard. You don't have to threaten the hosts who are asking you. Again, it just makes you look foolish because it's a pretty obvious giveaway that they're right, or at least that you believe there's validity to what they're saying and to what they're asking. And by resorting to insults and trying to change the tenor of the conversation and getting all defensive and bristly and prickly, you just look bad, period.
Okay, so what?
That's a good question. There's no comeback for that, Jarrah. The owner of the Cowboys, I know it's been talked about ad nauseum. I'm sure you've heard the audio by now. If not, I suppose we can replay it at some point. It's all over the place, though. And I did see, because Sean and RJ, we are following each other, one of them, both of them, I'm not sure. But I see some of their stuff on social. And I can imagine, and I can understand why they're pretty hot over the idea that he pays them. And that because of that reason, he owns them and the questions. And that the questions should not be in any way probing or acrimonious or what he takes as acrimonious. According to what I've seen online, they do not get paid. And I would be shocked. The station might have to pay him, but that seems stupid, right? So what generally happens when it comes to weekly interviews in which you are able to promote and able to let your audience know, every week at this time, we're going to have this owner. I mean, Jerry's a specific case. Every week at this time, we're going to talk to this head coach or this offensive coordinator or this player. Usually what happens is the station itself is paying for that right to interview whoever it is. And a lot of times the money will go to that player's favorite charity or will go toward, you know, their own charitable organization, whatever it is. Most of these guys don't need the money, but the idea is you're paying for the exclusive rights to have that person on your show every week at the same time so that you can promote it and people know it's coming up. There, I am I would be stunned. I guess I could be wrong because I don't have any inside knowledge, but I would be stunned if Jerry paid them specifically. This is an independent media organization, though maybe he would prefer that they are fans. And even if they are fans, but are professionals and able to do their jobs in a way that is objective. He clearly is not able to be objective, at least not on Tuesday. So bravo to Sean and RJ. It was Radio Gold. First and foremost, they are radio hosts, and it has been replayed all over the freaking country. And they are the talk of the town. The interview is the talk of the town. And since that is the goal every time you go on the radio, not to get clicks, not clickbait, but to produce Radio Gold, content that people are desperate to hear, well, they did their jobs. And so as far as I'm concerned, that's the most important thing. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I do certainly hope station management is backing them too, because that is important. You can find me, whether it's our Facebook page or our Twix, either one. And I will go back and answer a bunch of your questions that you posed that were not answered on air. Our phone number always 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. We talked about this a couple of times during the show, but game two of the ALCS, I never thought I would see a manager be so bold and so dangerous, so unconventional as to walk Juan Soto in order to face the most prolific hitter in the American League, the best home run hitter in Major League Baseball, more RBI than any other hitter in baseball this year. And I know Aaron Judge at that point was 2-for-15 in these playoffs, but man, what a moment. Now, it worked for Stephen Vogt in the second inning. I guess you could say it worked. Bases were loaded, one out. He takes his starter out of the game, and Tanner Bibee went really short. And Bibee was clearly frustrated by the whole thing, but only lasts four outs. He then brings in Cade Smith out of his incredible bullpen, and Cade gets Aaron Judge to fly out. Now, it is able to score a run on the sac fly, and so that, I guess you could say, it was a successful strategy, as opposed to, I don't know, Aaron Judge hitting a grand slam, which was always a possibility. So yeah, that, I think you could say that that was probably a move that paid off for Vogt, though it was definitely a gamble. He was looking for something, anything, to try to stymie that rally by the Yankees. So at that point, they're up 3-0. The problem is that his strategy worked. But the Guardians, they're out there making errors, giving away opportunities of their own. And I can only imagine that a lot of Guardians fans this morning are waking up thinking, what could have been? And probably the Guardians themselves are waking up thinking, what could have been? An error in the first that scores a run. An error in, what was it, the sixth? Also, that scored a run. Two fielding errors. Now, and remember what happened in game number one. There were five wild pitches. So if you put those two together, the Guardians have allowed four runs that were unearned, that came because of their own mistakes. And they had multiple chances, a lot of chances against Gerrit Cole, others against the Yankees bullpen. The way that they are hitting right now, it feels like they're close. They're on the cusp, getting closer to the big hit that will break it open and give them some confidence. I don't know whether or not hitting is contagious, but I know that the enthusiasm, the energy, that is definitely contagious. And unfortunately for the Guardians, they were 0-for-7 with runners in scoring position and left 11 different guys on base. So now they're trailing 0-2, lose both games in the Bronx. Of course, you're going to get everything from both sides saying that there's still a long way to go in the series.
You got to keep moving. We need two more here, but we can't get ahead of ourselves. You know, we just talked about it as one game at a time. And, you know, excited to hand Clark the ball in game three and hopefully try and get another one.
Be us. Keep doing what we're doing. We had traffic all night tonight. We do what we do. We get on base. We make things happen. We just didn't get a big hit with runners in scoring position tonight. You know, we're one swing of the bat away from taking the lead in that game. We're one swing of the bat from being right back in it. That's who we are. No, we don't quit. We just need to keep being us.
That's definitely how it feels. They're close. Now, this isn't a 5-game series. It's a 7-game series, but they're going to have to take advantage of that crowd at Progressive Field. We did confirm it's still named Progressive Field. And the fans that will be intense, recognizing that they need to be a part of this ALCS now. As for Cole, 4 1/3 innings pitched. You could tell, I mean, he started out, he had traffic on the base paths and he fought through it. But then you could tell, seemed like he tired out, maybe the adrenaline, whatever it is, all the energy that you're pouring into this, he seemed to tire. And it was in the 5th inning where he really almost couldn't throw a strike. And then the Yankees go to their bullpen and they still are busy walking guys left and right. And that inning seems like it went forever. So not quite as locked down as what Gerrit Cole had in his last outing.
Yeah, it was all right. Ben, don't break. Clay picked us up. That was huge.
Unit!
Yeah, no yelling after this one. Clay Holmes.
We got a lot of work to do. I mean, we're going to face a really tough opponent.
Clay Holmes came in the 5th and was able to get the next 2 outs. I like what Anthony Rizzo had to say when he was speaking to TBS after the game. He went 2 for 4 in this one with a run about getting to play, the privilege of playing in the ALCS.
You never know when you're getting an opportunity like this. And we work so hard behind the scenes, workouts, off-season training, in-season training, in-season grinding. So these are the best moments.
That's cool, right? They are ultimately guys who have big dreams, and this is how they get there. And as much as you could point to the Guardians franchise record, going back to before they were the Guardians, and recognize that this World Series would be something special and unique. They were so close in 2016, not able to protect the lead they had in the World Series. The Cubs are able to rally back. I mean, this is humongous for the city if they can get to a World Series again. Yankees actually haven't been there since 2009, right? So it's been a long time for them too, as much as it's not decades and decades. It's still a hungry fan base and one that has very high expectations on a year-to-year basis, where you're considered a failure if your team doesn't get to the World Series. So it's a blessing and it's a curse. I do think there's more for the Guardians to say, more for them to do. I do love their bullpen. Pitching, kind of wondering about how it stacks up moving forward, and just with the moves that Stephen Vogt is making with his pitching staff, pulling guys relatively early. I know that's more the trend in Major League Baseball. I don't love it. And at this point, I listened to a lot of Tom Hamilton on Guardians Radio when I was getting ready. So it was kind of the 7, 8, 9 innings when I was listening to him. And he was talking about, I mean, these are his words, not mine. The team doesn't have enough talent to be able to make these kind of mistakes, the wild pitches, the errors, and still beat the Yankees. But also, you know, talking about just the spirit that they have and how they've taken what they have and they've maximized that as a team, kind of that corporate synergy, and still do have much more to give. So I'm excited about the series moving forward. I do think that the Guardians will answer back. At least I hope so, as I know that as human beings, the worst situation to be in and the toughest question that we never have answers for, what if? What if we had done this differently? What if we had handled that situation in a different way or taken advantage of our opportunity? So I don't want there to be what ifs for either of these teams. At A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page as well, we had a pair of mammoth trades from the two teams that were last seen on the football field at MetLife Stadium on Monday night. So Bills and Jets both trading for wide receiver ones. Cam Akers goes back to Minnesota because the Texans, they've now got a wealth of running backs. And Mike Tomlin potentially going to make a change at the quarterback position for the Steelers as they face the Jets. Oh, look at that. It's 6 degrees of separation. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You're listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
1 man to beat 10. He's gone!
They throw in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown!
Made a guy miss. He's inside the 5. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown! Southern Salting into the end zone. Touchdown!
people have spoken, and one score stands above the rest. Here is your TD of the week.
Aaron Rodgers in the shotgun. Takes the snap and drops back again, a two-man rush. Steps up in the pocket. Has time. He's just going to heave the ball towards the end zone. Gets a Hail Mary into the end zone. It's tapped around. Alan Lazard. The ball bounces out. He thought he had it for a touchdown. Did he have it? It's a touchdown! It's a Hail Mary touchdown to Alan Lazard before halftime.
Wow.
It is ruled a catch by Alan Lazard in the end zone for a Jet Hail Mary before halftime touchdown.
Well, isn't that fitting? You all chose Aaron Rodgers to Alan Lazard, one of his former Green Bay teammates, who's now a member of the Jets, in large part because of Rodgers, though I know Lazard got to New York first. The Call with Bob Wischusen on Jets Radio, your choice for TD of the week. Thanks, as always, for your votes. Who doesn't love a Hail Mary? It's probably his third, fourth that he's had in his career. One of the reasons why he's headed to the Hall of Fame. I think that's actually a stat, number of Hail Marys, completed touchdowns. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Now he gets reinforcement in the form of another former Green Bay teammate. And this story arc is just crazy to me. From the category of you can't make this stuff up. First of all, Devontae Adams, one of the most successful receivers of this current generation, is about to go from Green Bay to Oakland to Las Vegas to New York. Not something you generally see over the course of, say, what, 10 years-ish? And he just left Green Bay a few years ago. He predated Rodgers' departure. But they're together in Green Bay. He desperately wants to play for Oakland because that's the franchise that his family has always rooted for. They're dyed-in-the-wool Raiders fans, Oakland Raiders fans. So he asks the Green Bay Packers to trade him. He leaves more money on the table with Green Bay. They send him to Oakland and allow him to go where he wants to play with his college best friend, Derek Carr. Carr, after 1 year with him, gets benched when they hire Josh McDaniels. Carr leaves and go to New Orleans, and now in the wake, Adams is left with a revolving door of quarterbacks, from Jarrett Stidham to Jimmy Garoppolo to Gardner Minshew to Aiden O'Connell. He's had a third head coach, and even though he stumped for Antonio Pierce, it's still a mess. I can understand why he wanted to leave, but the idea that he's now heading to New York and that the Jets are putting together a roster that makes Aaron feel more comfortable, this is terrific. Again, from the category of you can't make this stuff up. So Aaron apparently found out as he was driving home fuming from Monday Night Football, and then he was doing his show with Pat McAfee like he normally does every week, and lurking in the background is Devontae Adams, who kind of pokes his head in, and he gets asked about his hamstring, which, remember, has kept him out for the last 3 weeks.
I'm feeling great, man. Feeling great. Getting, I was working with the staff over in Vegas the whole time, and they got me back right, so, fortunately, I'll be able to roll.
Amazing how that happens. The hamstring, it's, voila! It's better. He's injury-free.
One of those West Coast to East Coast hamstring injuries.
Whether you want to,
buy, buy, buy,
in a bear market, or
sell, sell, sell,
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Seen him all the time.
It's mysterious. Just a mysterious healing. A miracle, if you will. Jeff Ulbrich has been able to interact with him for a couple of minutes, but man, it's all new for a lot of them.
Got an opportunity to actually meet him this morning, which was even better. You know, I knew him obviously from tape and everything that we've seen as a football player, but to get to know the man a little bit this morning was special. Like, you can just feel it on him. Just not only that elite player, but an elite human being and teammate.
Oh, it's terrific. Seriously, I love the NFL. It's delicious. This kind of reality show drama that they normally script behind the camera. And here is the NFL serving it up for us as we head into week 7. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Woody Johnson just said he was trying to put the right pieces in place and a good opportunity. But Of all the teams that wanted him, he ends up with New York. They do need a wide receiver one. I'm with you there. Oh, wait. There's that guy named Garrett Wilson. What about him? Anybody heard from Garrett yet? Oh, gosh. He and Aaron are already still, I mean, it's not been a smooth transition. Let's be honest. Sometimes it looks dynamic. At other times, the connection just looks completely off. There's a reason why he's comfortable with Alan Lazard. He played with him before. That seems to be his go-to guy. I mean, I'm not surprised about that until he and Garrett can get it worked out. So now they bring in Devontae Adams. Where does that leave Garrett? Serious question.
Witness protection program.
Oh, stop it.
Or at least him and Williams.
Oh, no. Oh, that's right. Mike Williams, who fell down right in front of the pass that was coming. And now it was an underthrown pass, so it was coming his way. So that's Jets and Steelers that we will get on Sunday Night Football, and this one taking place in Pittsburgh. Mike Tomlin was asked about his QB1, Justin Fields, on Tuesday.
Justin has been really good, and we've been really good at times, but not to be confused with great. Man, this is a competitive league, man. We're trying to position ourselves to be that team, and we got a player with talent. Who hadn't had an opportunity to play, so we're going to potentially explore those things. When that happens is a component of the consideration.
Not to be confused with great. All right, I appreciate his clarification in case anyone was confusing the Pittsburgh Steelers with great. I mean, there are times when they look good. The defense has been great. TJ Watt is great, but overall, he doesn't want us to confuse the Steelers play or where they are right now with great.
That's ball in life as well.
So when will he make the decision on who starts at quarterback? I do love questions for Mike Tomlin.
I don't know. Closer to game time.
Is there something you're looking specifically out of each one of those leading up the week to help you make that decision?
I'm looking for top quality play, man, and winning. Not only from them, from all of us. That's what's required in our business.
Steelers are 4-2. Could, in fact, use a different quarterback. He actually says they could end up using both quarterbacks, Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, who's now healthy from that calf. So they're tied with the Ravens atop the AFC North, another 4-2 team in the AFC. In fact, the only other 4-2 team in the conference is the Buffalo Bills. We had talked about this following Monday Night Football. Even though they got a win and Josh Allen was terrific, they had a rookie running back. Now, that makes sense because James Cook was unavailable. That rookie running back, Ray Davis, was also their leading receiver. Not a recipe for long-term success. They need to have a deep threat. They need to have more options in the passing game. And I know Keon Coleman has had some sweet moments. He's also a rookie. But they need more for Josh Allen. They need someone who can get downfield, someone who is got a ton of experience, and that's Amari Cooper. So we're talking about Devontae Adams getting traded and moving around a bunch. How about Cooper, who's now been traded, what, 4 times in the past 7 seasons, 8 seasons, something along those lines? Maybe it's a little longer than that. But yeah, I mean, he got traded from Oakland, also Oakland. Just what's the common denominator here? He got traded from the Raiders to the Cowboys. Remember, it was a first-round draft pick. I actually thought the way that he played with the Cowboys for those few seasons, 3.5 years, that he was worth 2 first-round draft picks. He was terrific. Of course, CeeDee Lamb replaced him as wide receiver 1, so he ends up in Cleveland. Cleveland's been trying to shop him behind the scenes, kind of quietly, and he fits right in as quickly as they can get up to speed in Buffalo. I think this is a terrific move for them. Cooper may not be your fastest guy out there, but he's precise with his routes. He's professional. He knows how to lose the coverage. He'll fight and be physical for the football. And last year, coming off a career-high 1,250 yards, too, and this is with how many quarterbacks? 5 different quarterbacks in Cleveland, and yet he had 1,250 receiving yards. So, yeah, I like this move with the Bills. I think this could be a huge injection into the offense. They need to get They need to get James Cook back, but to add Amari Cooper to Keon Coleman, Khalil Shakir, I know, has had a couple of catches. Dalton Kincaid, that's a big deal there for Buffalo, for Sean McDermott. And one more, what can Amari bring to the offense?
I think that remains to be seen, right? He was obviously on a different team as up until a couple hours ago. So We want to get him in here and get him up to speed on our terminology and our system and see how he fits in. And like I said, it's never about one guy. It's about the team and, in this case, the offense.
Never a dull moment, Pete. Here I am thinking, all right, we're going to focus on a baseball game, a real powerful moment in hockey as the Blue Jackets open their home schedule and honor Johnny Gaudreau. Then the NFL comes along with three trades, another signing. Tom Brady becomes a part owner of the Raiders. What is it about the Raiders? Why are we talking so much about the Raiders?
Oh, because they have pieces that need to be sold, and the deadline is actually coming up.
My gosh. When is the deadline?
You know, I thought it was week seven, but I think it might be election day now.
They've moved it. Yeah. It's election day. You're right. It's 4 o'clock Eastern time, 1 o'clock Pacific on election day. Wow. Yet another reason to take the night off. Just kidding. I'm taking the night off because of election day, not because of trade deadline.
Those are the leads in hours 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Wow. Night. Inside of 3 weeks to go. Let's go. Let's move. I know there's a lot of early voting going on. Let's vote. All right, coming up, it was a powerful tribute in Columbus. I listened to it first on Blue Jackets Radio. Then I watched it on TV, NHL Network. Had a chance to talk to a Blue Jackets insider who was there in the arena. And even though he was just with us last hour, I do want to bring back part of that because it's important for hockey fans, for sports fans. This man impacted a lot of people's lives. And not only was he remembered in a fitting way, but once again, sports have the power to help us heal from some of the most painful and most brutal tragedies. It's After Hours here on the Infinity Sports Network. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
We begin with Game 2 of the ALCS and something the Yankees have been waiting patiently for.
Now here's the 1-1. Judge, it's a high fly to center. Back goes Thomas on the track near the wall. She's gone!
Aaron Judge with his first homer of the playoffs. John Sterling the call on Yankees radio. Yankees beat the Guardians 6-3 in Game 2. And they take a 2-0 series lead, Game 3 Thursday in Cleveland. Mets and Dodgers play Game 3 of the NLCS Wednesday in New York. The series tied at a game apiece. Luis Severino against Walker Buehler, the pitching matchup. The NFL is awarded Super Bowl 62 in 2028 to Atlanta. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell says Atlanta is a world-class city.
They have been known on a global basis as the city that can make things happen, brings great events, reflects the best of America and the best of this country.
This will be the fourth time Atlanta has hosted a Super Bowl and the second time at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Other NFL news, Jets acquire Devontae Adams from the Raiders. The Bills acquire Amari Cooper from the Browns. The Vikings acquire Cam Akers from the Texans. NFL owners approved Tom Brady's purchase of a minority stake in the Las Vegas Raiders. Now to the NHL. Leon Draisaitl scores in overtime. The Oilers beat the Flyers 4-3. Elsewhere, Matthew Coronato with a couple of goals. The Flames over the Blackhawks 3-1. In a shootout, Stars over the Sharks 3-2. The Kraken beat the Predators 7-3. Wild over the Blues 4-1. Panthers beat the Blue Jackets 4-3. Spencer Knight with 35 saves. Hurricanes double up the Devils 4-2. The Capitals beat the Golden Knights 4-2. Alex Ovechkin with a couple of assists in that game. And Anthony Cirelli with a goal and an assist. The Lightning topped the Canucks 4-1 in Tampa. I'm Peter Schwartz.
The Infinity Sports Network is on your smart speaker. All you have to say is, play Infinity Sports Network. That's it. Play Infinity Sports Network.
Cleared back through the neutral zone. Chinnikov has it. Plays it over to Sean Monahan with a shot. Save made. Rebound! Score! Sean Monahan got two kicks at the can, and the second one was good for a goal. And the Blue Jackets once again lead. It is 2-1.
I felt like Johnny's watching down on us today, so, I mean,
had a feeling I was going to get one. Fortunately enough, I did. We lost, which sucks. But, I definitely could feel John today.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Bob McGilligott on Columbus Blue Jackets Radio and Sean Monahan, close friend of Johnny Gaudreau, scores and pays tribute to his friend. As you can imagine, an emotional night, but a powerful tribute that the Blue Jackets put together along with the Florida Panthers to honor Johnny and his brother Matthew and also remember them. The whole family was there, friends, teammates. There was not a dry eye in the house. That includes me, and I was watching in my living room. We had a chance to check with Jeff Svoboda, who was there as the Blue Jackets insider and writes for the website, to get his perspective. And I wanted to bring back part of our conversation because it's worth hearing. This hockey player had an impact that went far beyond his sport and even his own city or family. And I asked Jeff what he would remember about the tribute on Tuesday night.
The two things that come to mind, the raising of the banner with his wife and kids, standing with Sean Monahan, who is one of his best friends and was someone who signed with Columbus this year to have a chance to play with him again. To see them together and see the banner go up to the rafters was certainly an emotional moment. But the one thing I think everyone will remember is the opening faceoff where they left the left wing spot where Johnny Gaudreau should have been standing, left that open. And then, you know, Sean Monahan wins the faceoff over to Sam Bennett, who now plays for Florida, but was teammates with them for a long time in Calgary. And Sam takes the puck and puts it where Johnny should have been standing. And then, you know, 13 seconds come off the clock. And as everyone kind of realized what was happening there, really it was a groundswell of emotion in the arena. And you know, a lot of the players talked about, you know, that's a moment, as emotional as it was, one that they will never forget in their hockey careers. To do it in a game and to have such a fitting tribute with players that Johnny had spent a lot of his career with, it just hit hard, but it hit all the right notes to be a fitting tribute for the kind of player that Johnny Gaudreau was.
Jeff Svoboda is with us from Columbus after the Blue Jackets have their home opener against the Florida Panthers, but more importantly and powerfully honoring Johnny Gaudreau and his family being there in-house. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I know a lot has been reported about Guy Gaudreau being there for practice and spending time with the team and how that has helped both him as well as Johnny's teammates. How impactful was it to have so many of his family members and friends there for this night?
Certainly it was. And, you know, I had a chance to talk to a couple of them after the game, and they all spoke about how it just was a very fitting and tribute to Johnny. And so that's obviously great to hear as well. But when you ask about Guy, I think that, you know, I can only imagine what that family's gone through, you know, losing two brothers, two sons, you know, two husbands over this stretch. And, you know, if you're someone like Guy Gaudreau, who has spent a life in hockey, you know, he was the one that taught Johnny everything from the moment he was probably, you know, a year old to him becoming an NHL superstar. And it's been funny the last couple of years. Johnny obviously played in Calgary for a long time, comes to sign in Columbus because it's not very far from his home in New Jersey. And he really found that out the last couple of years because it felt like his father and mother were at pretty much every game and every practice. They would just hop in the car. And I remember talking to Johnny about that after he signed. It's like, you know, there'd be days where he would just get a call from his dad and he would be like, hey, we're about an hour away. And it's like, I didn't even know they were coming. And they're basically already in the state and they're about an hour away from knocking at the front door. So it's been a family affair for them for their entire lives. I mean, they're a hockey family, and Matthew also played with Johnny at Boston College and played some minor league hockey. So I think for Guy, anytime he can be out on the ice and anytime he can be kind of part of that hockey fraternity, you know, he did it a little bit in Philadelphia as well with John Tortorella inviting him out. Anything he can do to kind of get back to a sense of normalcy, I think any of us that have experienced tragedy in your lives, normalcy helps. Anything you can do to kind of pass the time and feel like you're back in where you should be is a good thing. And I think that's meant a lot to Guy the last couple of days. And I kind of have a feeling we probably have not seen the last of him around here, because I think the more you can do that, the more it's just going to help get through the grieving process.
How did the Florida Panthers pitch in?
Yeah, and that was something you know have to give stick taps to them, as they say in hockey parlance. They made it very clear from, you know, the beginning when they were coming here for this game that they would do anything they could to help the Blue Jackets. Their head coach, Paul Maurice, talked pregame. He was actually happy to be the team that was there because they wanted to do anything they could do to support the Blue Jackets in this. And so even head coach Dean Evason of Columbus didn't know that they were going to do the face-off. ceremony. So I think some of the Panthers kind of got together with some of the Blue Jackets to make that happen. A first-class operation there all the way around for them to kind of approach this with open arms and do anything they could. You know, they got off the bus when they got to the arena with purple Gatorade and Skittles in their hands, which was Johnny's favorite candy and his favorite drink. Johnny sometimes was, he had a very particular set of taste buds, was known for eating pasta without sauce and before games, just straight pasta with butter on it instead of putting any sort of like marinara or anything on it. So he was very well known for probably eating like a 13-year-old really throughout his career, but it worked for him, obviously. So the Panthers knew that and were sure to kind of give him that shout out before the game as well. So they did everything they could to make this a memorable night for everybody involved.
Jeff, I know this is an unfair question, but I'm going to ask anyway. What did Johnny mean to the Blue Jackets and the organization in the two seasons that he was there?
It starts going back to the day that he signed in Columbus, which I believe was, may have been July 13th of 2022, 2 years ago. I can't remember for sure if it was the 13th, but it was in early July when free agency started, and him signing with the Blue Jackets was a real sign to the NHL that Columbus was a desirable place to come play. There had been a number of players who had been here for a while that had kind of spurned the team and gone somewhere else in free agency, didn't want to re-sign long-term. It felt like, you know, they wanted to be other places, and it was hard here in Columbus to kind of see that happen time and time again. And then Johnny Gaudreau, when he signed in the summer of 2022, was the biggest free agent on the market. And when it happened, I mean, the NHL world and fans in Columbus were in shock and disbelief. The biggest fish out there said he wanted to be with the Blue Jackets. And unfortunately, it didn't lead to wins and losses the last couple of years, because the Blue Jackets were in a rebuilding phase where they were going through bringing in young players, trying to build their team around high draft picks the last couple of years. And rather unfortunate now that Johnny will not get a chance to see that through, because he wanted to come to Columbus. He wanted to be a winner. He wanted to help those young players come along and be a mentor to them as he built them, you know, this organization into a championship outfit. And so, you know, when you think about just the impact he's had, he was the leading scorer the last 2 years. So many kids, so many fans wearing 13 jerseys, whether they're playing hockey or just coming to the game. You know, he really embraced it here and wanted to be part of the community and said he wanted to be here. And for a place like Columbus that has just not had the winning tradition of some other teams, that really did mean a lot. And so I think there is always a soft spot in the community's heart that he said he wanted to be here, and he proved he wanted to be here. This community meant a lot to him, and his widow Meredith spoke about that at the eulogy, just how much they love this community and how much they wanted to bring a winner. And it really was the start of a very special relationship between the Gaudreaus and Columbus that unfortunately has been cut short.
Jeff Sobota of ColumbusBlueJackets.com with us in the wake of the tribute and the home opener on Tuesday night. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So much was made of how Johnny overcame obstacles from his time when he was in college, BC, on into his NHL career. How did he do it? What kind of a player was he?
There was actually a very fitting moment in the video tribute that played before the game where Johnny had said his father, Guy, told him, because Johnny obviously was not the biggest player in the NHL. In fact, one of the smallest. And his dad told him when he was a kid, if you're a small guy, you have to play your way onto a team. If you're a big guy, you have to play your way off to it. So
ooh,
there was always kind of that chip on Johnny's shoulder of he had to be better than everyone else to get to the highest level. And he was at the highest level immediately from when he got into the league. But he wasn't the biggest guy, so he had to be smart. He had to be someone who could really stick handle, had the puck on a string, it felt like at all times. He really thought the game at a level that, you know, most people do not. His abilities with the puck on a stick and his abilities to not get hit and to kind of find the spots on the ice where he could do his damage was clearly someone who had, A, got a great education from his dad of how to play the game, but someone who just thought the game at a higher level. And it came through practice. He was a rink rat. He was someone who was out there as much as he could be there. You know, in the summer, there was another quote from him in the video tribute where he said, you know, usually in the summer, kids want to be playing video games or whatever. He wanted to be on the ice. And so that's just how much the sport of hockey meant to him and to the family. And, you know, watching him play the last couple of years, you could see that just in his play. If he wasn't on the ice, he was with his family, but he sure did spend a lot of time on the ice. It was really a joy to watch. And it's funny when I say he wasn't the biggest guy. There's stories going back to junior hockey when he was playing in the USHL in Dubuque, and, you know, NHL scouts would come in and get the heights and weights of the players, and he would stuff as many pucks as he could in his shorts so he would be just a little bit heavier when he was getting measured, because he wanted to, he didn't want to seem as small as he actually was, but In that small package, there was one heck of a hockey player, I can tell you that.
Really good stuff with Jeff. And there's more. There's more about the community and how they'll continue to honor him throughout the season and how they've moved forward in the last 6 weeks, as hard as it is. And he's right. Sometimes getting back to quote-unquote normal can be a relief. But at the same time, there's no way they can forget he was supposed to be out there on the line with them, as they signified last night in the first 13 seconds. If you haven't seen the tribute video that the Blue Jackets put together to honor Gaudreau and his brother Matthew, and really the family and their family unit and what he did as an undersized overachiever, if you will, I did share it online at A-Law Radio. It's worth watching. Enjoy your hump day. We're back with you tonight. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.